This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane. There are persistent, encouraging signs that the COVID Omicron wave is on the way down. There were more than 100 deaths yesterday, more than 4,000 Australians in hospital with COVID, and an unknown number are battling long COVID. Yet the Burnet Institute's published research showing how many lives could be saved if masks were worn right now. Annie Guest reports.
It's a loss for Brisbane's Wes Mitchelton Junior Rugby League team, but the coach and club president, Mike Liddell, is just glad illness hasn't stopped the game.
Each club and team has been affected by COVID this year. I think our under-18s had 6 to 8 people sick with COVID in 1 week.
With Brisbane's show, known as the Ecker, this week, Mike Liddell wants greater COVID precautions to protect the community, including the businesses who donate to the club.
Sponsorship, we've gone from like $30,000 a year from local sponsorship down to 15. It's halved. Possibly the reintroduction of masks in social settings, particularly in things like the Ecker, I think would go part of the way towards slowing down any spread.
Professor Adrian Esterman agrees. He's the chair of biostatistics and epidemiology at the University of South Australia. And he says even though the Omicron wave is coming down, this is no time for complacency.
Well, we're well over the peak and sliding down the other side at the moment.
And what does that mean in terms of numbers?
Well, we're currently sitting somewhere in around the sort of 20 to 30,000 new cases a day.
He thinks the number of Australians diagnosed with COVID could remain at least 20,000 a day until another coronavirus variant causes a new wave, possibly in November.
What's happening with COVID in Australia is simply not sustainable.
Professor Brendan Crabb is the director of the Burnet Institute.
10 million plus Australians have had COVID this year, and we've seen how that's played out in every facet of our life. Yes, in hospitalisations, and of course in an extraordinary death toll. It's now well over 10,000. But also for how our businesses operate, you know, travel chaos, schools struggling, getting people back to work.
Then there's long COVID.
You think about your circle of friends, you may not know too many people with long COVID. Now that's because probably about 1 in 40 or 1 in 50 of you have long COVID. But by the end of the year, that's more like 1 in 20, unless we put a handbrake on this.
He says your chances get worse every time you catch the mutating coronavirus, with the notion of herd immunity a furphy.
So we have to change from a high COVID strategy to a low COVID one.
That means vaccines, testing, better ventilation, and free, higher quality N95 masks, along with better education. Professor Crabb says it could save hundreds of lives within months.
We've done modelling with mask use and increasing mask use to say that if that happened even from July, that many cases, up to 20% of cases, 20% of hospitalisations and 14% of deaths between July and October could be averted.
He's urging other states to follow Victoria's lead and provide free, high-quality masks.
Annie Guest reporting there. Australian pharmacists say people who are eligible for COVID antiviral drugs should be allowed to get them over the counter without a script. They say many patients who need the drugs are missing out. While the Therapeutic Goods Administration's loosened the criteria to allow more people to get the medicines, some groups say people who need them are still finding access very challenging. The specialist reporting team's Nick Sass has the story.
Liz Pickworth is no stranger to navigating the medical system. The Canberra mother lives with a rare cancer, and earlier this year, when she was diagnosed with COVID-19, a specialist told her to get antivirals as soon as possible. But that proved very difficult.
You know, constantly calling around, just not knowing where to turn for information and support, and to be able to access the antivirals, I was just at a complete loss. It was, yeah, a really strange feeling, just feeling like I need to beg for the things that I need to survive, and in that case it was the antivirals.
Despite numerous calls to health authorities, no one could arrange for her to get the drugs, and she had to struggle through cancer treatment with the debilitating side effects of the virus.
But the worst symptom that I had was very bad gastrointestinal upset, and that was quite worrying.
Pharmacists say people like Liz, who are eligible for antivirals, should be able to get them over the counter at pharmacies without a script. Pharmacy Guild President Trent Toomey says delays in getting to see a GP are a barrier to getting the medications quickly, which is problematic as the drugs are most effective when taken in the first few days after diagnosis.
And our patients are telling us that they are frustrated that by the time they can get an appointment with their doctor, they can the 4 days has already elapsed. So what we would like is we would like Australians that satisfy the criteria to not have to go to their doctor to get a prescription. We would like them to be able to just present to their pharmacy and the antiviral can be provided.
Liz Pickford had COVID in January when antivirals had only just been approved. ACT Health says the eligibility criteria and access to treatments has evolved significantly since. AMA National Vice President Danielle McMullen says while there were some challenges in getting the drugs out early on, those have been addressed.
But we've seen a really positive increase in the number of prescriptions being dispensed over the past couple of weeks in particular. So I think word is getting out there that these important medications are available.
Many patients contacted the ABC saying they were able to access the drugs easily, particularly by using COVID hotlines or state-based hospital in-the-home programs. Dr. McMullen again.
And now that both medications are available on the PBS with a broad range of eligibility criteria, it does make it easier for us as GPs to prescribe these medications.
The Federal Health Department says measures have been taken to increase access to the drugs, including expanding eligibility criteria for people over 50 with two risk factors and immunocompromised people aged over 18. Up until the end of July this year, more than 180,000 scripts had been written for the two antivirals on the pharmaceutical benefit scheme.
Nick Sass and Sophie Scott with that report. Skilled migration visas have been a godsend for regional businesses that have been struggling to find enough staff. That's especially so for pubs, restaurants and other hospitality venues. But those workers and their employers say long delays in processing applications are causing serious problems for the workers and their families. And it's feared the strain will prompt desperately needed skilled workers to leave Australia. Danielle O'Neill filed this report.
Hey, Maxie.
Yeah.
Lots of curry tonight, mate?
It's a beef curry, yeah.
Beef curry, yeah.
It's right. Tourist season in the outback Queensland town of Longreach, and the Birdcage Hotel is under the pump.
Mate, today we've got 26 and one for review option two.
Yeah.
I'll text you their order as soon as I know, mate.
No worries, yeah.
Max Madushka Dilshan Pereira from Sri Lanka has been the head chef here since 2020 and has service down to an art. But the hard-working chef has been stuck in limbo, trying to get visas for his wife and two-year-old daughter to join him in Western Queensland.
Hi!
Forced to wait while the borders were closed during the pandemic, they applied for the visas in March this year. Max hadn't heard anything from the government since April, leaving him desperately worried.
I'm trying my best to stay here because I love this town and people are always nice to me and it seems like they're enjoying my meals. But I have to think about my family as well. Right now, I work here, I go home, I got no one. Last week, I got sick and I had no one.
After the ABC spoke with Max Madushka Dilshan Pereira, we sent questions to the Department of Home Affairs on Monday morning. And that afternoon, after months of waiting, Max's family was suddenly granted their visas. The news is a boost not only for Max, but for his boss, publican Gavin Ballard.
It takes a special person to come out to the outback and to work. So when you get someone that wants to stay as a business owner, you certainly want to look after them and do the right thing by them as well, you know. We've had a trial of chefs sort of, they come this way and the job offers and they just go back to the coast, you know.
The extreme pressure on Max and his family has been relieved by the sudden issuing of the visas. But around Australia, there are thousands of people stuck in similar situations. The Restaurant and Catering Industry Association's CEO, Belinda Clark, says it's a big concern for the industry.
Many stories that we're hearing about families that are broken up, people trying to get into the country, very long delays. But I think the biggest issue that we have is there's no communication. And that's what's the hardest thing for people to be able to plan and understand of what's happening. Will this be able to be processed? Will I get a yes or a no? But there's no communication.
More than 56,000 skilled workers entered Australia in the last financial year on the same temporary skill shortage visa as Max. But government data shows it's taking between 6 months to 2 years to process visas for families of skilled regional workers. In a statement, the Department of Home Affairs says the demand for skilled workers and processing current visa applications is a priority. But Belinda Clark says it could take up to a year for the Albanese government to catch up on the backlog.
And they're not happy. You know, they know there's a problem. They are trying desperately to find the solutions, and they certainly weren't expecting it to be quite a huge amount that they had to process. But it's not going to be a problem that's fixed in the short term.
The Restaurant and Catering Industry Association's Belinda Clark there, and our reporter, Danielle O'Neill. There's been no word from the US Justice Department on the reasons for an unprecedented FBI search of the residence of former President Donald Trump. Senior Republicans, meanwhile, are talking of nothing but accusing the FBI of being used as a political weapon and demanding a full account of why the search warrant was executed. It's believed to be related to the illegal removal of presidential records from the White House when Mr. Trump left office. North America correspondent Barbara Miller reports.
A day after the FBI entered Mar-a-Lago, the silence on the part of the agency and the Department of Justice is deafening, raising the ire of Republicans, including Florida Senator Rick Scott.
Merrick Garland, Joe Biden, Chris Ray need to come out and say, why are they doing that? And why couldn't they do this another way? This should scare the living daylights out of American citizens.
Former Idaho District Attorney Wendy Olson thinks, given the sensitivities, it's not a bad idea for the Attorney General or FBI Director to make a public statement.
It would certainly not be unusual for Merrick Garland or for FBI Director Wray to talk about, at least in general, the investigative activity that occurred and perhaps the nature of the crimes that are under investigation.
Do you think they should?
I think it would be helpful. I mean, information abhors a vacuum, and or a vacuum needs information.
With Donald Trump hinting heavily that he'll run again for president, the raid has focused attention on an obscure law, which would bar anyone convicted of mishandling classified information from holding public office.
I think there are a lot of questions left before we could get to the point of thinking about what potential charges would be and what the ramifications would be. We're very early on in this investigation, I think.
American prosecutors try to avoid taking any steps that could be seen to interfere with an election. But the Mar-a-Lago search is already firing up Trump's base. Mary Martin is the GOP chairwoman in Teton County, Wyoming.
You know, as of last night, I do hope that he does announce his intention to stand.
As of last night, why?
Because I think it was political gamesmanship at its worst.
You don't think that the FBI must have had good reason?
No, I don't think that. I'm not sure that the FBI is the neutral and stellar law enforcement agency that it once was.
President Biden has not commented on the development, but Democrats are keen to let it be known they had no prior warning. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
I was surprised that it flashed on my phone last evening.
As for Trump, after his lengthy and angry statement on the raid, he referred to it only indirectly when appearing in a virtual rally with House candidate Sarah Palin a few hours later.
This was a strange day. You probably all read about it.
The former president said it had been another day in paradise. This is Barbara Miller in Washington reporting for AM.
3 days on from a ceasefire between Israel and the militant group Islamic Jihad, residents in Gaza are feeling nervous the truce won't hold. Families continue to bury the dead, and for the hundreds of people wounded in the three-day conflict, including many children, it'll be a long and painful recovery. Our Middle East correspondent Alison Horn is in Gaza, and a warning: her report contains some distressing material.
Inside Gaza's busiest hospital, the paediatric ward is full of wounded children. This father breaks down as he recounts how close his son came to dying.
I carried my son to the ambulance. He was bleeding.
they could barely save him.
His son, 8-year-old Amir, tells me shrapnel from a rocket went through his body close to his heart. Gazan officials say at least 15 children were killed during the three-day missile war between Israel and the militant group Islamic Jihad. Scores more were injured. Israel claims some children were struck by misfired militant rockets. Hannah Alawi is keeping a bedside watch over her 11-year-old relative Mayar, who was hit with shrapnel while playing near her house.
The people in Gaza should not live under weapons and bombing, and the children should not live under horror. This is not their destiny.
But what the future holds is still uncertain. It's now 3 days since a ceasefire was declared, and so far it's holding. But as the streets of Gaza slowly come back to life, this woman tells me of her trepidation after yet another conflict. Our spirit is down. We're still afraid. Afraid that fighting starts again, she says. The physical and emotional scars of this war are a long way from healing. This is Alison Horn in Gaza, reporting for AM.
Take my word for it, they do look a bit cute. They've been known to disappear from the Australian landscape for decades at a time, and many times they were feared extinct. But there's a big ray of hope that the desert-dwelling central rock rat can be saved from extinction. We've been given access to a rescue mission to save it. Eliza Getzey reports from Western Aranda country in central Australia.
It's 3 o'clock at Ormiston Gorge and the afternoon light is bouncing off red rock. Western Aranda people call this Jota. It's the West McDonnell Ranges, an hour from Alice Springs, and normally it's a place of tranquility. But today, for a team of scientists and rangers, the race is on to save Australia's most endangered mammal.
About 10 to 15 centimetres in length. They're quite chunky. They're golden brown fur, large bulging eyes, little rounded ears, and then quite a long tail.
Danae Moore is a senior ecologist with the Australian Wildlife Conservancy. She's leading the operation to save this cute little animal that's only ever been found in two locations. And her team has just loaded the precious cargo onto a helicopter. 31 central rock rats collected across remote and rugged desert country. For all involved, there's both relief and trepidation.
I did feel like bursting into tears. We've all been working hard for months on this project. So to see that first load of animals head to New Haven is just, it's phenomenal.
These rats are bound for New Haven Wildlife Sanctuary, 200 kilometres away in the Tanami Desert.
One of the key threats is predation by feral cats. So where the animals will be released is in an area where that key threat has been eliminated.
The mission to secure this elusive animal's future has been extremely difficult, as Alice Springs Desert Park senior zookeeper Peter Nunn explains.
It has a boom and bust life cycle. So they were found in the 60s and then they disappeared right through to the 90s, despite a lot of search effort to try and find them. And then in the 90s, they turned up right here in the West McDonnell Ranges and here in Ormiston Gorge around the 2000 mark. And then again, they disappeared from this site. Certainly I participated in one of the surveys in 2010 where we refound them just a little bit further west than here. Yeah, so that was a very exciting time.
Right now, the central rock rat is in a rare boom cycle after good rains in central Australia last summer. 74 rats were captured in Jota, some bound for New Haven, others for Alice Springs Desert Park, where they'll be part of a breeding program to boost the species' low genetic diversity.
Okay, where is he? So Ormiston Gorge male.
He's with the Giles Springs so far.
Which is 74.
So we're going to get females from the west, males from the east, and then we carefully place them in the transport containers and pack them up ready for the chopper ride.
Now the work to settle the central rock rats and their new mates begins.
We've still got a lot to learn about the species as well. So ultimately we'd like to reduce the extinction risk. And I think this project will go a long way in achieving that.
Senior ecologist Danae Moore, ending that report from Eliza Getzey. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi,
day. I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. The Reserve Bank has spent most of the year furiously increasing interest rates. Now the big banks are betting they'll start falling again soon. It's not due to an improving economic outlook, but because we could end up in a recession. Today, the ABC's business editor, Ian Verinder, on the miserable state of the economy. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.